The next case this morning is number 05-1368, the United States against Alan Sankey. Mr. Dana.
May it please the Court, my name is David Dana, counsel for Alan Sankey. There's only one issue on briefed on appeal, and that's the reasonableness of this 21-month sentence that Alan Sankey received, and the reasonableness under the Booker standard by the Supreme Court. Appellant argues that the sentence he received was unreasonable in light of particular circumstances in the case below. Those circumstances include the fact that although counts 2, 3, and 4 of the indictment involved essentially the same facts, a credibility dispute or difference between the father and the son about whether the father had given permission for equipment to be used for a collateral. The jury acquitted on counts 2 and 3 but convicted on count 4, raising a question as to whether there is a kind of rationale underlying what the jury did. That's further complicated by the fact that the jury during deliberation sent out a note to the judge asking the judge hypothetically if we acquit on all the counts, and they did acquit on 3 of the 4 counts, would the defendant be required to repay the loan? And so, given and the judge essentially declined to answer the question. So, given those circumstances, the fact that there was a conviction on one count that is factually, in any real way, given the only issue was credibility, inconsistent with the other acquittals, that the jury seemed to be concerned that there be some way to give a requirement that the loan be repaid, there's at least a serious question raised as to whether the jury convicted on the basis of actually finding that the defendant misrepresented himself to the government. Given that, it seems the sentence should have taken that into account, particularly since the sentence included an enhancement for essentially perjury or obstruction of justice, which, again, the jury deliberation, the pattern of what happened, particular facts, suggests there's some question about that. So it's our argument that given that there is a reasonableness review, reasonableness is very much fact-specific, and given to the particulars of this case, made the judge's sentence otherwise, which would be proper, unreasonable. So if there are any questions...
I don't believe so. Thank you, Mr. Tate.
Thank you.
Peter Giroux for the United States. Your Honors, the sentence was based on a properly calculated, unchallenged guideline calculation of 21 to 27 months. And after considering the factors of an 18 U.S.C. 3553A, the defendant's arguments that it was an unreasonable sentence simply aren't founded. As an initial point, the first three initial claims he makes aren't even 3553A factors. They basically relate to alleged trial errors. And so as a result, there's no way to measure those errors against the 3553A factors. In light of the fact that it is an unchallenged and properly calculated guideline range, the presumption would be that the sentence is valid and reasonable. And that's not rebutted by anything the defendant is raising at this point. More important is that the alleged trial errors that he's talking about simply aren't trial errors. The first one was the inconsistency of the verdicts. There is no inconsistency. The first two counts in which the defendant was found not guilty on, and the third count, or count 4, which he was found guilty on, involved different property and more property. And count 4 occurred on a different date. This all relates to pledging property for an FSA loan or Farm Services Agency loan. The question of whether or not that the jury was properly instructed on repayment of the loan, as the defendant has pointed out, the jury sent out a note saying, what about repayment of the loan? How would that affect it? If does the defendant still have to repay the loan? The court specifically remarked to the jury they're not to concern themselves with that, which is legally correct. Repayment of the loan is irrelevant. Finally, the defendant points out that the jury did not make the finding on obstruction of justice. Again, that's a misreading of or a misunderstanding of what the Supreme Court decision is in Booker. It simply doesn't take into account the fact that the remedial portion of Booker made it clear that the guidelines are no longer mandatory. The jury doesn't need to be finding those things as long as they're done in an advisory fashion, which was done here. The last claim that the defendant makes is that the court somehow either or it's just simply a general argument on the last page of his brief that the court did not take into account his familial situation. Well, first of all, the court did take it into account. They were in the PSI. They were argued before the court by the defendant. And more important, they appeared at trial. And for the purposes of this court's review, they were uncontested. The government didn't say, gosh, there weren't familial problems. And the defendant concedes in his brief that those aren't excuses. They're just something that the court should take into consideration. They were uncontroverted facts. They were before the court. There's no reason to think that the court didn't take those into consideration. This decision by Judge Crabb was consistent with this court's decisions post-Booker and handled in a manner that was consistent with this court's expectations. The defendant was given a properly calculated guideline. He was put at the bottom of the guideline range. He was allowed an opportunity, given an opportunity to address 3553A factors. Those factors are considered by the court, and the court ultimately gave a discretionary sentence. Really, this is there are no errors in this case, and the court should affirm the judgment and conviction.
Do you think the it doesn't have a lot to do with the reasonableness of the sentence, but the response of the judge to the jury's question, does he still have to pay back the loan if we acquit him on all counts? You think that was a good response?
Yes, it was, Your Honor. And the reason why is because although I think, you know, we can speculate about what the jury might or might not have been trying to get at, the critical factor here is that it was the falsity of the statements and the material falsity of the statements. If the court's suggesting that somehow we should take into consideration factors such as whether or not the loan was repaid, then you can imagine that virtually in every fraud or in every bank robbery where the defendant said, well, I'll pay back the money I stole from the bank, or let me go and turn it back in. And that seems, quite frankly, to be the argument of every defendant who's once he's caught in a white-collar case, is that I'll pay it back. And this court and the courts generally in the United States hold that that's just simply irrelevant because what we're trying to address is whether or not the defendant lied in the very first instance. So not only do I think that the court was correct in that instruction to the jury, it was actually a very correct holding of the law.
Because you fellows are all from Wisconsin here, I'll, with my colleagues' indulgence, I'll tell you the most famous story of a jury question in Wisconsin. As Judge Dick Orton in Sparta County trying his very first trial, and the defendant was charged with stealing a cow. The problem was that the owner of the cow was one of the biggest SOBs in the county. Nobody liked him. But the evidence was airtight. So the jury deliberates. They come back in. They give the verdict to the judge. The judge reads it and it says, we, the jury, find the defendant not guilty, but he must return the cow. The judge, in response to that, says, I can't accept a verdict like this. This is inconsistent. Go back and deliberate some more. Jury went back in. 5 minutes later, they came back with another verdict that said, we, the jury, find the defendant not guilty, and he keep the cow. So there's more than one way to answer these sort of inquiries from a jury.
That's true. Unless the court has any further questions, then. Thank you.
Thank you, sir. You have 8 minutes, sir.
You don't have to use all 8 minutes.
No, I won't. Your Honor, I just make a couple of points. One is, after Booker, since the guidelines are advisory and since the standard is a reasonableness standard, circumstances that don't fall directly under the guidelines can pertain and be something that the court would like to look at under Booker for reasonableness. The second point I'd make, just going to the inconsistency of the verdict, is that although the fourth count did involve some additional property and a different date, there was the same issue at stake in the second, third, and fourth counts, which is did the father give permission or not to have some equipment used by his son as collateral? And so when you actually look at the underlying issue, there's really no kind of logical way to distinguish counts 2 and 3 from 4, even though there is some additional equipment. So those are the main points I would make. And then the final point I would make just about the jury note is I think it's important to note that, going back to the judge's story, in a sense, that the jury didn't ask simply whether the loan had to be repaid. They said, hypothetically, if we acquit on all four counts or if we acquit on all the counts, would the loan have to be repaid, which really does suggest that that was a pertinent factor to their question about whether they should go ahead and acquit, which might lead to the question whether the judge should have had a kind of more nuanced response. And again, I do think that goes to reasonableness because reasonableness is a very much broad-based standard. So even if that's not a jury error, a legal error per se, what the judge did, I think it can pertain to the reasonableness of the standard. If the court doesn't have any further questions.
I gather not. Thank you, Mr. Dana. I noticed that you took this case by appointment, and you have the deep thanks of the court for your efforts on behalf of your client.
You're welcome.
Indeed, our thanks to both attorneys, and the case will be taken under advisement.